guys, welcome back to Navigate Devotional. Here at Navigate, our hope and prayer is to help you engage with the Bible. It's through the Bible that God speaks, and today, as we have a conversation over this passage, we hope you're able to be refreshed, challenged, and comforted by what God says.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Navigate again. Today we're going to be looking at Romans 8, 12 to 17 in this episode, and we're going to pick it up from Romans 8, verse 12. Therefore, brothers and sisters, we have an obligation, but it is not to the flesh to live according to it. For if you live according to the flesh, you will die, but if you live according to the Spirit, you put to death the misdeeds of the body, you will live. For those who are led by the Spirit of God are the children of God. The Spirit you received does not make you slaves so that you live in fear again. Rather, the Spirit you received brought about your adoption to sonship, and by him we cry, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are God's children. Now, if we are children, then we are heirs, heirs of God and co-heirs with Christ, if indeed we share in his sufferings, in order that we may also share in his glory. So I'm joined again with Ross as we chat over this passage. And Ross, Romans 8, 12 to 17 is one of your, is it one of your favorite passages or favorite ideas in the Bible?
It is for today. There's lots of favorites.
It's good. Okay, so what are we talking about? We've just heard there's no condemnation for those in Christ in the last episode. This idea of put to death the flesh and live life in the Spirit. Here, Paul takes this slight movement into this beautiful idea of really adoption and what it means to be called children of God. So let's have a chat about this idea.
Yeah, it's a big concept, isn't it? To change our status, change our citizenship, change our birth certificate, really, to say we're no longer, living as children of Adam in line with the world standards, but God's called us to be a part of his family, to even call us children. Mm. And I think the big contrast here is when he says, the Spirit you receive does not make you slaves, but then goes on to say the Spirit you receive makes you children.
Yeah.
And that's a big step up in the status ladder that, you know, children are loved and cared for and brought into intimate relationship as opposed to the slaves. And we think in first century, it was common to have slaves. It was more like servants around the house. Yeah, it's not like your oppressive slavery system. It was just a common household thing to have slaves. So it's normal language, but slaves are kind of on the fringe of the family. They might be cared for, but they're not really. Well, they're in no way part of the family.
Yeah, and they definitely wouldn't get an inheritance or anything like that.
No. And if you want to go to that prodigal son story, I think that is a really helpful story where it talks about the young son coming home. And you might recall when the young son comes home, he says, you know, he has this rehearsed line of, hey, make me one of your hired hands.
Yeah.
It's like, can I come home? But I know I've burnt my bridges. I've done terrible things to you. Can I come home as a slave in the household? And if you recall what the father does, like gives him a hug and a kiss, and then he gives him all his stuff. So like give him the ring, get the signet ring. So that's, you remember, you kind of see it in old movies where the you write an envelope and you put a seal on the back.
Yeah.
And you put the family sign on the back of the envelope.
Old movies.
You know what envelopes are, right?
Yes. What are you talking about?
So each family had like a brand.
Yeah.
And that was the whole idea of the ring. Give this guy, he's got the status of the family again. You bring in the robe, the family robe that has got some sort of like royalty and status to it. Slaves don't get that either. Mm-hmm. Even give him the shoes. Slaves don't have shoes around the house in those days. But we want shoes on this boy's feet because he's a part of the family. And even throw him a feast. You wouldn't do that for a servant. But he says, you're my son, and I'm going to restore you as a son. And it's just an amazing picture if we put ourselves in that shoes before God, and God gives us the ring, gives us the robe, gives us the shoes, and throw us a feast. Like, the illustration I've heard is like, end of each world war, all the soldiers coming home, and the The people come out and celebrate the returning soldiers. They're our heroes. Mm. Yet this boy gets that sort of welcome when he comes home.
Yeah.
And he's blown all of Dad's money and offended him.
Yeah, and we talked about this too. Like when he did take his money and offended him, he was saying to his father, I wish you were dead.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So for this reaction from the father, it's so amazing that the father in the story of the prodigal son would do that. But even more so, I mean, when we're reflecting on the story of Romans, we've gone on this journey of saying no one's good, no one's righteous, we've all fallen short, that even when we want to do what's right, we stuff up. And yet God would have this reaction to us, that instead of, you know, kicking us out, instead of even, you know, making us slaves, he invites us in and calls us children of the living God and throws that party, kind of that picture of throwing the party for us. It's yeah. like it's unbelievable, really, to think that God would do this.
And it even says he invites us to call him Abba, Father.
Yeah.
It's not, like, that's intimate. It's
so the Abba thing there, if we've never heard this before, you know, you got to, what do we hear when we read Abba? I mean, is this the intimate, you said intimate there. Is this idea of, you know, a first century call to a dad or something like that? It's not like just calling on a, you know.
That's right. It's Dad.
Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Well, it's just like, if we've never heard that before, it sounds like a music band from the, what, 60s, 70s, 80s?
Ugh, please. and 90s and 2000s. Yeah, they've been around for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's, I'm trying to think what language it is from. And yeah, I'm no linguist.
Yeah.
So yeah, it is. We cry Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing that I find interesting here is this idea of adoption into sonship. He doesn't say you are born as sons of God, but you're adopted into sonship. We had an interesting interview once at Southside. We have a couple of people at least who have been adopted and now as adults. And I interviewed one of them at church and I said to him, he's got a sibling who was born naturally from his parents, but yet he was adopted. And I asked him the question, did he feel second rate in that family? Because, you know, the parents wanted children, they finally got one, but in the process of all that happening, they adopted one. Mm. So did he feel second rate that he's not, you know, the family genes? And his answer has just stuck in my head because he said, no, it's actually the opposite. I felt favoured as their children. Because they chose me. They come to the hospital. They got their thing, come and pick up this child. They chose to have me. And with his sibling, he says, well, they just got what they were given. He's like, no, I feel very much a part of the family. And if not, even more because they really wanted me.
Mm.
And I think that really captures something of God's desire for us in that he really wants us to be a part of his family, and he went out of his way to enter our world through Jesus, for Jesus to come and to purchase us with his blood so that we can be made a part of his family.
Yeah.
So he come and sought us out.
Yeah, it's super helpful picture. We're not second-rate citizens. We're not slaves. We're not just kind of in the household, but, you know, cast out to the, you know, the bad room or the far corner or whatever.
Yeah.
But we're brought in, we're God's children. We cry Dad or Father. And then it has that picture there, we're heirs and co-heirs with Christ. And it's that image of being seen as sons and daughters of the living God.
That's right.
Yeah. Now I just want to reflect on this for a moment. This idea of the relationship between us and God. Because, you know, Ross, for a long time at Southside, we've been working together for, you know, some would say too long, maybe 12 years or something like that. But, you know, you've often spoken about how important it is to see God as Father. And so I wonder if you can just reflect on that, why it is that this is such an important thing that we get our head around, that God is our Father.
Yeah, I would sharpen that a little bit so to say God, the Father, Son, and Spirit.
Yeah.
And we need to actually relate to them, not as just God as a general term, but we are actually, that there's three in one. There's one God, but he's three persons in that. There is God the Father. He's the one who chooses us. He's the one who comes up with this redemptive plan. He sends his Son to come to redeem us through Jesus' death on the cross, but it also talks in this passage about the Spirit, the third part of how God lives in us through his Spirit. And I think knowing God, you might say, in three parts becomes a lot more relational. He's not just out there and mystic and what is this thing we're meant to follow? But to actually call him God does help us picture a relationship. And I know a lot of our dads aren't perfect and the image of Father is not always the ideal picture, but it is a starting point to go, actually, he's someone who he cares for me, he loves me, he's my protector, he's someone I can be safe with. So identifying, just pulling apart God into their three parts is a helpful thing, I think. How's your experience, Benny, of just become a father? How's that changed your idea of God the Father?
Yeah, you know, well, I guess kind of reflecting on that, I don't think I really appreciated knowing God as Father as much as I have recently with, you know, the birth of Poppy, and you just, it's a newfound experience of love that you have for your child. And yeah, before that moment, I don't think I, understood it as much, because when you have, when we had Poppy, it was just this moment of, you know, you actually want the best for her. You love, you know, we, Elizabeth and I, we love her. We care for her. We want the best for her. And there's just this instant affection where, you know, it doesn't matter if she stuffs up. It doesn't matter if she's having a bad day, that, that there's this love for her that actually is just kind of intrinsic in that moment. And before we had kids, I don't think I appreciated that as much. And reflecting on it now, I think the closest thing that, you know, I probably had before we had kids to understanding the type of love, and it might sound weird and come across a little bit weird, but was almost self-love, in the sense that when you think about myself, like, I don't want anything bad to happen to me. You know, I want the best for me, you know. And I think all of us as people, I don't think I'm alone here, we want the best for ourselves. And if we don't have kids, there's kind of that sense that that could be, or it might be, as I reflect on it, it was the closest thing for me to know this love now that I have as a father.
Yeah, so if you had things that you wanted in life, you made the sacrifice to do it for yourself, your own benefit, to love yourself in a sense, in a positive way.
Yeah.
But as a parent, like, a switch happens, doesn't it? When you hold your child for the first time, all of a sudden you're prepared to give up hours of sleep. You're prepared to give up so many things to make sure your child has the best chance possible.
Yeah, that's right. And then, you know, then you take that next step and go, well, this is what God has done for us. So God has loved us so much that he's not just gone, okay, yeah, you can come into the house. But to do that, he sent Jesus to die on the cross. That he, Jesus suffered. We see it in this passage. He suffered and he died so that we could be brought in, and not just as slaves, but as children and co-heirs with Christ. And now we can know that actually our Father in heaven loves us. It's relational. He cares for us. He wants what's best for us. And it's just such a beautiful picture to see that this God is not far off, as you said, but he's a God who cares.